Welcome to War News Radio. I'm Rachel Young. This week, as the daily papers follow the development of what they're calling the worst migrant crisis since World War II, we remember a migrant crisis closer to home.
Yesterday in Arizona, passionate protesters on both sides of the debate turned out in droves once word spread that a busload of unaccompanied immigrant children were set to arrive.
You're just lucky! You're not better! None of you are better than them!
Last December, our reporters Patrick Hahn, Tyler Welsh, Maria Castaneda, and Liliana Frankel investigated the child migrant crisis. You can find that episode on our website. It's called Travelers. Lily's research for the show led her to Albergue Hermanos en el Camino, a migrant shelter in Ixtepec, Oaxaca, where she spent the past summer living and working as a volunteer. We're going to spend the next 3 weeks telling stories she collected from Central American migrants there. This week, By Force, the story of Lisandro Lopez, a Honduran veteran of the war in Iraq.
Albergue Hermanos en el Camino sits beside a set of train tracks which run south to Mexico's border with Guatemala. The freight train used to pull into Ixtepec, loaded with Central American migrants, but people have been arriving on foot since it became illegal to ride the train last summer. The shelter provides migrants 3 meals a day and a space to rest. Many apply for their Mexican refugee paperwork here, which can take months to process. It's a waiting place. I came to the shelter wanting to interview migrants about the places they came from, what they would miss and what they would carry with them. I was imagining their journey as the first time these people had left home, and I thought it might be interesting for them to practice explaining their cultures to someone who came from outside. What I didn't anticipate was the migrants' cosmopolitanism. While the majority are Central Americans, some come from minority cultures within their home countries. For example, Garifuna people from Honduras, or practitioners of Santeria from Cuba. Others have already lived abroad for many years. There are a few French speakers who were deported from Quebec, and even one Guatemalan man who learned Russian from his life in New York. Then there's Lisandro Lopez of Silca Olancho, Honduras, who believes that he can speak Arabic. I ask him, what does that mean? And he tells me in Spanish, surrender, son of a bitch, because I'm going to kill you. Fluent speakers on our staff say that, in fact, Lisandro's Arabic needs some work, but why did he learn it anyway? In 2003, Lisandro, a member of the Honduran military, was sent to Zaragoza, Spain, where he was taught Arabic. From there, he and his brigade were shipped out to Najaf, Iraq, where he served for several months as part of what President George W. Bush referred to as the Coalition of the Willing. Lisandro was injured in Iraq, and still suffers from anxiety and mental anguish as the result of his wartime experiences. The psychiatric care he needs is in the United States, where he lived for 10 years after coming home from the war. But a few months ago, he was deported to Honduras when police stopped him for driving with his auto insurance 3 days expired.
I feel that I've been betrayed by the law because I used to be part of it. I didn't achieve anything. The President of the United States never wanted to give me my papers because due to the training I received for the war in Iraq, they say that I'm a threat to national security. I know that I'm not a threat. I'm courteous and disciplined.
I didn't even know that Latin American countries had sent troops to Iraq until I heard Lisandro's story. But as it turns out, a lot of the smaller nations which fought in Bush's Coalition of the Willing were more or less coerced. President Bush would have liked the United Nations Security Council to approve his resolution on the invasion of Iraq. However, as the vote approached, it became clear that he didn't have enough allies to secure support. The resolution was withdrawn, and the U.S. began to negotiate outside the UN's purview. By some measures, they were successful. On the night of the invasion, the multinational force was 37 countries strong. A victorious-sounding Bush pronounced that
every nation in this coalition has chosen to bear the duty and share the honor of serving in our common defense.
In the case of Honduras, it's easy to pick out the many angles from which the United States could have exerted pressure. The U.S. has sponsored training for the Honduran military since 1954. It pumped over $1 billion in aid and loans into Honduras's economy during the second half of the 20th century and forgave $434 million of bilateral debt in 1991 as a reward for the nation's loyal military allyship. At the time of the Iraq War, the boons of a close relationship with the United States were clear. Shortly after the Honduran government agreed to commit troops to Iraq, it signed a free trade agreement with the United States, and in 2005, the IMF forgave 100% of its existing bilateral debt. The way Lisandro sees it, most agreements between the government of the United States and the government of Honduras don't represent the best interests of the Honduran people.
The high-up officials of Honduras go on indebting themselves to the United States, so people have to involve themselves in wars that don't interest them. Because the professionals don't go to war. The people who go to war are those who have never been trained in a profession, people who have no fear. Professional people will always be afraid.
As a young man, Lisandro felt ambivalent toward the idea of joining the military, but his father advised him that a military career would be a necessary step to avoid recruitment by a gang. When he returned from Iraq, he began to realize the dangers that accompanied his affiliation with the government. Because he belonged to the army, the gangs viewed him as an enemy. At this point, there were three options for Lisandro. One, he could become a bodyguard. Two, he could become a policeman. Or three, he could renounce his ideals and join a gang himself. Three options and all of them violent. Lisandro was already tired of fighting, so he decided to immigrate to the United States. He crossed the border at night undetected and ended up in Albuquerque. There, he found work in construction and met an American woman who he liked, his boss's niece.
During Christmas time, her uncle invited me to a party. That's where we met. Later, I began to talk to her with a little bit of English I know.
Lisandro thinks she liked him because he was funny. In time, the two would marry and have three daughters together. The way Lisandro kept interrupting our interview to make faces at a toddler wandering by made it easy to imagine his love for his children. Despite the happiness that comes with fatherhood, however, his memories from the war were persistent, and with time they began to seriously impact his mental health.
In the United States, I was analyzed because I was in a mental hospital with crazy people, but also with treatment. There, I found out that I suffer from mental anguish and anxiety.
Lisandro's doctors gave him medicine and encouraged him to take good care of himself. So that's what he did, until he was detained by police earlier this year on a road trip to Chicago. Lisandro suspects his New Mexico plates were what attracted their attention. And as it turned out, his auto insurance had expired 3 days beforehand. Separated from his wife, he no longer had any immediate family members with U.S. citizenship that could help him. He was afraid to call his brother, who's also an undocumented immigrant, to pick up his things from the police station. So after he was deported, the state expropriated his car. The situation when Lisandro returned to Honduras was even more unstable than when he'd left. There'd been a military coup in 2009, and violence was on the upswing. Lisandro claims that gangs are now using weapons intended for warfare and street crimes, including some of the same weapons he was trained to use in Iraq. It's a hard allegation to prove, but not to believe. The Honduran government has a dismal track record on decommissioning military arms. Almost everyone in Honduras has been touched by the violence in some way, and Lisandro's family is no exception.
A few of my siblings are now in the country of Belize. Another was in San Pedro Sula, but he's already been killed by the gangs.
The brother who was killed had been a student and an accountant. With his family targeted by the gangs, Lisandro had barely arrived in Honduras before he was planning to migrate again. The high stress levels inherent to the situation there also didn't bode well for his mental health. This time, although Lisandro doesn't have an official visa, he is traveling with documentation. He has several pictures of himself in Iraq, two death certificates of family members killed by the gangs, a letter from his mayor affirming that his life is threatened if he stays in Honduras, and a character endorsement from some policemen who are friendly with his father. Migration can be disorienting. Lisandro already isn't sure exactly how long it's been since he left home. What's more, with the new Mexican border enforcement strategy put in place last summer, migration officials are more powerful than ever before, but barely more accountable for their frequent abuses of human rights. Lisandro was detained in Tapachulas and witnessed the arbitrary beating of a Guatemalan man. But despite the difficulties of the road, he's determined to see his daughters again.
I come along almost like a detective, detecting the people that would hurt me, just like that. Sometimes I walk with fear, and other times with courage, and other times with fear again. Like the immigrant I am, I go forward carrying both.
In 2006, after Lisandro's first migration, the United States passed the Secure Fence Act, beginning construction of a wall along the southern border. But Lisandro believes that he's capable of making the crossing. If he's stopped by Border Patrol, he plans to tell them that he's an Iraq veteran and see what happens. But if that doesn't work, he's at least hoping that his wife will bring his daughters to say hello from across the border. He hasn't laid eyes on them for more than a year and a half.
I feel that I've been betrayed by the law. That's why, with my own force, I'm going to look for my refuge. My refuge where I'm going to live by force. By force, here, I can't go around following laws to the letter because the laws aren't interested in my security. The person who has to look for security is me. And if I have to seek it by force, I'm going to seek it.
I met Lisandro near the end of June 2015. He was in such a hurry that he didn't want to stay at the migrant shelter and apply for paperwork, though he likely would have qualified for a Mexican refugee status. While Lisandro was traveling, he didn't have an email address or a phone, but before he left, he gave me his brother's number so that I could follow up in the U.S. When I tried calling the number a few weeks ago, it was disconnected. It makes sense. Undocumented immigrants have to cover their tracks. Sometimes the worst possible ideas occur to me. Lisandro could be dead or kidnapped. He could have been deported to Honduras. He could have had another nervous breakdown on the road. But on the other hand, maybe he was right to believe in himself so strongly. He could be in Palomas, Chihuahua, waiting to cross the border. Or maybe he's already made it to Albuquerque to see his daughters. That's where I like to imagine him, taking care of his children, taking care of himself, in a country that can take care of him. If any of our listeners can provide information as to the whereabouts of Lisandro Lopez, we'd love to know. Send us an email at info@warnewsradio.org. That's info@warnewsradio.org. You can also listen to and share the Spanish version of the story on our website, warnewsradio.org.
Our show is produced this week by Liliana Frankel, Tyler Welsh, and myself, with help from Leo Elliott, Amber Sheth, and Anna Weber. Translation assistance from Professor Patricia Vargas and Evan Grennan. Special thanks to the staff of Albergue Hermanos en el Camino, and of course, to Lisandro Lopez for sharing his story. War News Radio is a production of Swarthmore College. Visit us online to listen to archived shows, learn more about our program, or subscribe to our podcast. That's warnewsradio.org. You can follow us on Facebook or Twitter to keep up between shows, and let us know what you think. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.